Hi, I'm here this week with an audio documentary from the BBC on the future of English. Not how the language will develop in terms of its words and grammar and all of that. This is actually more basic than that. The documentary suggests that in certain parts of the world, English is losing some of its cachet, that its dominance that we hear so much about is actually being challenged by other languages. Now, the reporting that you're going to be hearing is specific to a certain part of the world, the Malay Peninsula. The countries we're talking about here are Malaysia and Singapore. And there's a ton of reasons why English may be declining in each of these countries. They're different, in fact, from one country to the next. But I really don't think these are unique cases. I think you can find similar situations in other countries in very different parts of the world. Anyway, here goes with reporter Jennifer Pack.
It's 4:30 in the morning. I'm in Johor Bahru, a city way down south in Malaysia. I'm up this early because every morning, this minivan we're in takes 12 children to their school. But this is not your typical school run. It's a two-hour journey across an international border to Singapore. These children are going to school in a different country just so they can learn good English. Normally these students would be fast asleep, but because we're here, they don't want to be. The bus driver is going around picking up these children one by one, and he has this little old horn, an old bicycle horn, that he uses to call these children out. The bus driver thinks one of the students has overslept. We're stopped in front of a gated community here, and nobody's coming out, so he's just flipping through his phone book so he can call the parents and make sure the student comes out. Just gone through the Malaysian customs officials, so all of the children are now taking their passports back because when we go through the Singaporean side, they're going to have to get off this minivan and go through customs over there. In Malaysia's southern Johor state, there are an estimated 15,000 students making this bus journey across the border every day. Unlike Malaysia, English is the main language used in Singapore. It's an incredibly stressful bus trip for the children, but parents seem to trust the education system there to teach good English. Parent Shirley Chua and her child, Ai Han, says English is essential for her son's future. So she finds a lot of scientific and math-based knowledge is all in English. It is an international language. And, you know, for her son to be studying those subjects in the future, maybe, you know, to make a career out of it, he will have to, you know, go on the internet and search for scientific journals, and all of that stuff is in English. So that's why she thinks it's very important for her son to be very fluent in English. What about you, Ayihan? What do you think of your schedule then? Is it difficult?
Sometimes very difficult, sometimes very easy. Isn't it?
How long have you been doing this? How long have you been going to school in Singapore?
3 years.
3 years, which means that you started when you were 6 years old. Do you enjoy going to school in Singapore? Do you have friends on the bus, on the long bus ride to school?
Yes, but sometimes it's very the traffic jam. Yeah.
Until this year, children have been learning the key subjects of science and maths in English. It's an incredible challenge for the students to learn these subjects not in their native Malay, or BM as they call it, and also an incredible challenge for teachers that I met at the Tamantun Dr. Ismail II School in Kuala Lumpur.
My name is Zara Zulaili binti Zabba. I'm teaching science, year 6.
Just tell me about teaching sciences in English to your students. How are your students coping with it?
For the first two classes, they can understand English. So I can teach 90% in English and a bit of explanation in BM. The weak ones, two classes at the back.
So you're saying that you have two classes that are very good in English. And then
Very good, they can understand English. So there would be not much problem for me to explain in English.
And, excuse me, you have two other classes that are quite weak in English, yes. So you have to teach them entirely in Malay.
Yeah.
Could you give us an example of when you're in class, say you're trying to explain condensation, What parts of that do you explain in English and what do you explain in Malay?
Okay, I'll take one topic in science, like the living things. Animals is one of the types of living things. So animals, how they live, there are two types, in solitary or in group. First, I will tell them in solitary, how do animals live in solitary, and the examples of animals that live in solitary. And then I will ask them, do you understand what I've explained? So if they say, some of them say, don't understand, so I will explain, macam mana haiwan hidup bersendirian. So I will explain the first in English, and then I will go into Malay.
I mean, it's fascinating that these children are learning such difficult subjects in a foreign language. It would be the equivalent of me in Canada learning everything in English and then suddenly having to learn science and math in French.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, it is the official language, but I would find it very tough, very, very difficult. Okay. Do your students then get extra help outside of school?
Yeah, some of them, they attend tuition classes outside, but not most of them.
It was only 9 years ago that Malaysian children started to learn maths and sciences in English. But starting this year, the government has changed tack. Now children will learn the core subjects in Malay. It's a change from the old policy. Khairi Jamaluddin is a government politician in the youth wing of the party.
I, for one, was against the policy simply because it did not achieve its stated aim, in a sense that students' grasp of English was not necessarily getting any stronger. They were not necessarily becoming more proficient, and their conceptual understanding of mathematics and science was suffering because it was being taught in a foreign language. So what we've done, and what I favour, is for the Ministry of Education to actually revamp the teaching of English itself.
So then, what does English represent to you then? Is it a language of the past colonial masters, or is it the future?
No, absolutely. It's the lingua franca of the world today. It's the language of commerce. It's the language of international trade. But the question is, how do you teach them English? Do you teach it through teaching of English, or do you teach them through mathematics and science? My view has always been very simple. If you teach children a language properly, if you teach them English properly, then they will have absolutely no problems in reading and understanding technical terms when they come across them in tertiary education.
For some, though, the new government policy on English learning does mean relegating its importance, and they worry it's being driven by nationalism, which will harm Malaysia's economy. Wan Saiful Wanjian is with the independent think tank, the Institute for Democracy and Economic Affairs.
The bigger problem or the bigger challenge that the English language is facing in Malaysia now, I think, is the increasingly vocal nationalists in Malaysia who are demanding that more Malay language is used everywhere. The Deputy Prime Minister has been insisting that in the business world, the people use more of the Malay language and less of the English language.
And so, other than policy, are there other ways that we can see this being reflected in Malaysian society?
If you look at daily life, there are many instances where the use of English is sort of being discouraged. People are beginning to say that if you speak English, this is elitist, for example. This is being propagated among the population.
Can you give me some examples?
Yeah. The main theme is about uplifting the Malay language and ensuring the Malay language is not threatened, especially by English.
But is this just a feeling or is this a real fear? Has English been relegating the Malay national language?
Because English is the lingua franca of the world today, English is more popular than Malay. Even if you go to government department nowadays, you know, I go to Putrajaya, to our administrative capital, like almost every week for meetings. It is extremely rare to find a meeting where two Malays are talking to each other, use the Malay language. The main language in government at the moment, I would say, is English.
So what about you then? You have children. What do you think about their education then?
Yeah, I have three children at the moment, and they go to a government school. And it's increasingly worrying for me. You know, I would love to see my children being proficient in the English language. But I'm afraid I don't have choices. To go to a private school in Malaysia is extremely expensive. And before this, we did have this opportunity to use more English in the school. Now it's going to be reduced. And as a result, people who do have choice, people who can exercise choice, they have the money to pay, they will choose to go to private schools. And people who live near to Singapore especially, they will go more to Singapore. if they have the opportunity to send the children there. So someone like me, I'm stuck with what we have now.
So it's a complex picture in Malaysia. For some, the government appears to be backing away from English. Parents who worry about their children's future are taking matters into their own hands by either sending their children to private schools or over the border to learn good English. But here in Singapore, it's a different story. The Singaporean government has often been credited as far-sighted by adopting English as the national language. But now it's fixing its attention elsewhere. Right now I'm standing in Geelong. It's known as a kind of mini Beijing. It's the place where new immigrants from mainland China come to live. And most people around here speak Mandarin. And their presence here is just one of the forces challenging the dominance of the English language. Alex Au is a blogger, a commentator on political and social issues we met nearby earlier. Alex, what has been happening to the English language?
Well, English, which has been a kind of glue language among the different ethnic communities, each of which speak their own communal language, has been predominant as a glue for a generation or two. But I think going forward, it may be dissolving.
Why?
Well, there's the rise of China, very simply. I mean, business increasingly is being conducted in Chinese. Suddenly we see businesses wanting to hire people who are conversant in Chinese in addition to English. And as Chinese therefore gains in status, there's a tendency for people to prefer to use Chinese where they can rather than English because that's status.
And the government is pushing for Mandarin. They say they want to prepare Singaporeans to be fluent in Mandarin because of the rise of China. And, well, I mean, before it was about cultural reasons, but now they say there's an added benefit for you to learn Mandarin for economic reasons. What do you think of that? Have they been successful?
I don't even think that they are carrying out what they say they want to do, because non-ethnic Chinese are given very few opportunities to pick up Mandarin in school or in the adult years. So that may well be wishful thinking, in my view.
So you don't think the government is preparing Singapore for the rise of China?
I think they are stuck fighting the last war, being very afraid of racial tension if they try to encourage an ethnically identified language, Chinese, on non-Chinese. We've had a history of race riots, for which it was the wise solution then to use a neutral language like English as the glue language. It had the advantage at that time that America was supreme in the world, but China is now rising. And the language that will gain in importance is going to be Chinese, but that has ethnic sensitivities in Singapore, given our history.
Okay, hello, everyone. Let's start our lesson.
Whatever the sensitivities, and despite Alex's view, the government in Singapore is encouraging the take-up of the Chinese language by providing subsidies. Over at a Chinese Chamber of Commerce, they're running business Mandarin courses, not the common Chinese dialect of Hokkien, widely spoken here by the older immigrants. Classes help learners with mainstream Chinese culture, so they can, for example, read Weibo, the Chinese version of Twitter. The boss is Alvin Chia.
Back in 2009, the government started providing subsidies to Singaporeans and permanent residents. It was at a time when the global financial crisis, the government pushed to provide them with the opportunity to upgrade themselves so as to prepare themselves for the economic upturn.
I've come to the offices of Potato Productions, a Singaporean company that deals in video production, digital publishing, artist management, and, you know, hopefully breaking into the movie industry here. With me is the founder, Lee Han Shi. What's happening to the value of English now?
Singapore is the only country in Asia where English is the dominant language. And it's also the only country in Asia, outside of North Asia, where Chinese is a dominant language. So you have a very interesting situation here where Singapore can be the halfway house for the Westerner to go to China. They will stop in Singapore because there's much less of a cultural shock. In fact, there's almost no cultural shock in Singapore.
But as a businessman, you know, someone who's running a portfolio of companies, are you seeing that the English language is being affected? Is it becoming less important to you financially?
Oh, certainly. we have a company that work with a partner to do animation. That particular partner used to have 70 to 90% of his business from America. Now it has dropped to 50. The balance are from China. English is not as important now because instead of having to learn English to do business in America and the UK, what you want to do now is to, for us anyway, is to take the Western company into China. So obviously you need to know English, but you also need to know Chinese. What we are doing is to create Weibo strategies for companies and people and brands in the West and bring them into China. So in July 2nd, Emma Watson was in London, but somebody created a Weibo account for her. You see a picture of Emma Watson, you hear her voice. Hello, I'm Emma Watson. Ni hao. This, how are you? I'm very happy to be here. That's all. But immediately, the word go wrong in China that, oh, Emma Watson from Harry Potter is on Weibo. In 2 days, she had 120,000 followers.
And sorry, the message then was in Chinese?
No, it's in English. The only thing in Chinese was ni hao. But I mean, Chinese know more or less, I'm happy to be here. Yeah, you know. But of course, if she wants to continue to engage the Chinese audience, particularly for the brands she represents, Burberry, right, or whatever, then she has to be much more active in posting in Weibo. She could say, let's say, I have tried a new coat today, I like it, and put a picture on her. The effect is much more powerful than putting a full-page advertisement in a Chinese paper.
So where does that leave English then? When is English used?
Well, talking to the BBC, I hate to give this answer, but, you know, English is going to continue to be popular as long as Hollywood can churn out things like Kung Fu Panda.
Kung Fu Panda? What do you mean by that?
Well, you know, there's one of the big controversy in China now is the success of the cartoon Kung Fu Panda. It caused a lot of anxiety in China. Panda is a Chinese animal, but Kung Fu Panda is a cartoon produced in America and so popular in China. Every kid in China must have watched Kung Fu Panda. And you know the sad part about Kung Fu Panda for the Chinese is that before Kung Fu Panda, there are many, many cartoons in China about panda. But really, the kids don't care about it. The moment Kung Fu Panda hit the cinema, everybody watch it. They buy the merchandise, they do everything. And they learn English. So Kung Fu Panda is not only an entertainment movie, as you know. It's a cultural weapon.
Culturally, it's still important because of Hollywood and all of these movies. But economically, then you are saying perhaps it's kind of becoming less important.
Yes. Yes, especially if the renminbi is being used as a settlement currency. The decline of the English language probably followed the decline of the US dollar. If the renminbi is becoming the next reserve currency, then you have to learn Chinese. And more, you know, in places like Brazil and China, they're doing renminbi totally bypassing the US dollar. So really, there's no need to use English as a language.
Hear these words, hear this rhyme. I give you this sorcery sign.
And it's not only Mandarin that's challenging the dominance of English in Singapore. There's also the growing acceptance of Singlish. Some describe it as English with Chinese grammar. Others say it's a language in its own right. For years, it was discouraged by the authorities, but Singlish is now mainstream, and you can even hear it at last year's Christmas pantomime. Singlish is a curious clash of traditional English theatre meshed with the language of Singapore's streets.
Hello everyone, I'm Aladdin. Boy, yeah. Ayo, tomorrow I cannot pick you up, okay? Ayo, I cannot take any more half day leave.
Singlish doesn't get aired on national radio because the government has wanted to encourage its citizens to speak proper English. But locals want to hear it. It's their culture after all.
Yeah, fruit leaf the same lah. You must promise me, huh? No more funny businesses.
So people like Lee Kin Moon, who is more popularly known as Mr. Brown, began blogging in Singlish. His message is clear. Singaporeans should be proud of their hybrid language. That's why his podcasts have attracted many audiences online.
I like to think of it as encouraging others to appreciate our cultural nuances. In fact, I did a podcast recently on the iPhone 4S, where they had Siri.
Sorry, Siri?
Siri is the personal assistant that comes with an iPhone 4S that you can talk to. You know, you ask her a question and she will try to answer it for you. My podcast had a Singaporean version of that called Simi, which is a Hokkien word for what. And he was a very brash, Singlish-speaking character.
Give me one or two examples from your podcast then.
It started out innocently enough where one of the protagonists asks the new iPhone, "See me, give me my messages." And then the character goes, "What?" And he's like, "See me, give me my messages." And like, "What?" And, you know, he goes, "See me, got SMS or not?" So then he understands. In another scenario, one of the characters asks, "See me, tell me, what is the weather now?" And Simi goes, "Hot lah, Singapore is sure hot what. You know, there's only one weather in Singapore. It's either hot or cold. And besides, open your window, you can see what. Why you need to ask me?" So.
And so then is Singlish the language of rebellion?
I think it, to some extent, at least the way I use it, it is kind of a form of rebellion. It's like, if you insist that I'm going to speak in proper English, then I won't. I do it on the podcast because it's a form of rebellion, but on a daily basis, I speak Singlish because that's what we do here. It's odd to just go up to my friends upstairs and say, "Would you guys like to partake of a beverage?" Or, you know, everyone will look at me funny.
You think eventually Singlish could be like another accent of English, like how we would characterize an Aussie accent, American English, New Zealand English?
Yeah, but it's not an accent only. It's actually a dialect, technically. Like, if you watch an American program and it's based in New York, you know, because that's how people speak there. I watch a lot of this stuff, and only over a long period of time, I managed to actually understand what some of the African-American people were speaking. In fact, it's now more than that. It's different cultures in the Spanish-Americans, Mexican-Americans. And they have their own way of speaking, and the programs are livelier to me and more interesting, more authentic when not everyone speaks in standard English. They actually do speak in the way they speak on the streets. But none of our television programs here have this, except I think one. And even then, they got wrapped in the knuckles for it. I just carry on with my program without any reservations whatsoever.
And are you encouraging your son to speak Singlish then?
Huh. Yes and no. I correct his English on a daily basis because I believe he needs to know what is standard English, what's grammatically correct. But sometimes we do lapse into Singlish. We use the word one a lot. He's very like that one. That means he behaves in a very bad way. And that one, that particle, my mom brought me up the same way. Like, what, one, 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 don't use the word one. You know, one, two, three, four, five, you're not supposed to use one. But I know that down the road he will use one. I still do it. This camera, very good one.
Blogger Lee Kin Moon. I'm Jennifer Pack, and my producer is Simon Pitts.
That is so interesting. I mean, we hear so much about, you know, the global reach of English, and it's often presented as this relentless and inevitable sort of world takeover. Like, it just stands the reason that one day we're all going to be speaking English, or at least doing business in it. But this suggests otherwise. I don't know if I completely buy the idea that the fate of a language rests on the fate of a currency, but it is true that Western companies and products that want to enter the Chinese market in particular need to do so in Chinese. And Americans and other English speakers who don't believe that are kidding themselves. I'll post a link to Mr. Brown's Singlish podcast, also to some other episodes of this podcast, when we talk about some of the issues raised in Jennifer Pack's documentary. I have some pretty funny stuff on Singlish in particular. And I think Carol and I talked about the Malaysian decision to stop teaching science in English. I'll also post some photos of a couple of people who we heard from today. And that'll all be at theworld.org/language. And next week, if all goes according to plan, the future of English is back on a rosier course. Jennifer Pack heads to Vietnam, where millions of young people are learning English, which means it's boom time for English language institutes.
The growth is one constant, but the type of demand is changing quite a lot. Several years ago, it was a very general demand. People had a general idea that English is important. In the last few years, we've noticed that people have very special requirements with their English, whether it's to help with an overseas degree, or to help them get a promotion in their work, or to help them get a scholarship, or something like that. And they've got a short time frame these days. In the old days, they might have been willing to study for several years. Now it's a bit different. Now they want to do things more intensively, more quickly.
And all of this is having a profound cultural effect in Vietnam, which, of course, until recently was a controlled, somewhat closed communist society. So more of that next week. See you then.